and welcome to Phoenix Cinema Podcast. My name is Chris Austin.
And I'm Luke Parker.
And this is a podcast where we discuss what's showing at the historic Phoenix Cinema in North London. And this week, we're discussing the 1949 BAFTA-winning Carol Reed movie, The Third Man. Voted in 1999 by the BFI, the greatest British film of all time, Phoenix is screening this movie as part of its 75th anniversary. So, Luke, The Third Man.
Okay.
Thoughts, feelings, concerns. The greatest British film of all time, by the way. That's a heavy...
That is a very, very heavy accolade to have. Yeah.
Yes. Especially when there are films out there like Monty Python and the Holy Grail, for instance. who can probably equally lay claim to the same. Yeah.
Well, okay, the greatest British film of all time... That's in Vienna with an American lead. Okay, yeah. Sure.
Sure.
Okay. Sure, okay. I guess it's got British producers, I guess. And I guess Carol Reed, the director, he's English as well. So it does make sense.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoyed this movie. I think this is a quite a fun sort of detective story. I guess that's what it is. Sort of this, there's almost like a cat and mouse chase element to this film as well. Always like chasing the next secret or the next bit of information. And I think it is pretty fun. And it's got, to complement that, I think it's got pretty likable characters as well who all do a pretty fine job, I'd say, as well. Yeah, I mean, is this the best British film of all time? I'd be hesitant to say so, but at the same time, there is a lot to appreciate about the film. Yeah, they're my initial thoughts anyway.
Okay, interesting.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't really like it. Which I don't know. It's hard to really put a finger on why. I don't know. I guess it's just kind. It felt kind of inaccessible to me.
In what way?
Well, it feels like a very cold film. You know, it doesn't feel like there's any sort of feeling or emotion attached to it. I hate to say that a movie is dated, and there's a film podcast I listen to, The Next Picture Show, and one of the film critics on it like despises that word they use. Okay. Of its time, which is fair enough, yes. And I don't want to say it's of its time, it is, but it felt clunky to me in even how it was put together. It felt very arch, you know, with how, with the performances even, or how certain...
I don't know if I agree with that. I don't think this film feels clunky at all. I think it's actually quite well put together and very smooth, and I think it has a really interesting sort of... it's got a really interesting plot, I'd say. You know, that's always got you asking questions, and it's always doesn't really know where it's going. I don't think it feels clunky.
I mean, that's great. I'm so pleased. I'm so pleased that you didn't see that side of it or didn't feel that way. Yeah, because I don't know what it was, but it felt that way to me, just in terms of its framing, in terms of its editing. It just kind of felt, I don't know, sometimes almost mustache twirling. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? In terms of like, ooh, I'm not telling you the whole story here, or ooh, there could be ulterior motives behind my actions here. You know, I'm holding a tiny little dog in my arms and I'm staring at you in a certain way. You know,
yeah, okay.
These are all the, and so I guess it's tropey in that way, but yeah, those things kind of rub me the wrong way. I will say this as well, is perhaps if I had watched this in the cinema, maybe I would have been more invested. I did watch it at home, and when you watch things at home, they come with natural distractions, right? There's no one around to give me a stern look if I take out my phone. So maybe that was part of it, because yeah. I also, to what you were saying about the plot lost me. Yeah, it got to a point I was like, I'm not even sure what's happening anymore. And actually, come the end of the movie, with Orson Welles' character, what's his name? Harry Lyman? Harry Lyman or something?
Yeah, yeah.
I still didn't understand what happened.
Oh, okay.
That, you know, he was meant to have been hit, you know, hit and killed, mm-hmm. you know, by a car and there was a third man there, and who is this? But that he's walking around very much alive, and I don't know why at the end of the day.
Either
the film doesn't lay it out clearly, or I just wasn't paying enough attention.
I don't know. I guess I didn't really have that issue, but at the same time, I do agree that, especially around like maybe the middle third of the film, it does get a bit bloated and not much is going on, I'd say. I really, really like the ending, especially like the sequence in like the sewers. I think it looks amazing.
Yeah, I agree.
And it's a really cool climax. And I actually think one of the best shots of the film is the very last shot where...
Oh, wonderful shot.
Yeah, where you got Martin's just there waiting for Anna to walk down, but she just walks straight past him. Yeah, it's really cool.
Yeah, and it's like the symmetry in that shot of the trees on either, you know, on either side of them.
Yeah,
and what I love about it too is they are clearly barren, bare trees, but you have all these leaves floating down from above the camera to create some ambiance. But it's a beautiful shot. I do agree. On a technical level, the movie is quite lovely.
One issue I had with the film is that the music throws me, because
100%.
It does. I can't tell like what the tone is supposed to be, because it's like there's quite dramatic intense stuff going on, and then there's like this SpongeBob-esque music going on in the background.
You know, it's like what is happening here? That I agree with, the score is awful. It's just awful. I believe the composer's name is Anton Karas. This is his only film credit. I'm not surprised.
I don't know if like that type of music is like maybe supposed to be typical of like Vienna or Austria at the time or that area, but at least looking at it through this contemporary lens, at least it just doesn't work at all.
Absolutely. It has not stood the test of time.
It really hasn't.
Whatsoever. In fact, get rid of a score entirely. I think the movie could just benefit from its silence even more.
That's fair.
But yeah, no, to other than like the score, on a technical level, I know I've spoken about it felt clunky at times, but the black and white photography is incredible. The use of light, the use of shadow, and the locations and the set designs. I mean,
it's so beautiful. Like you have the contrast of, it's like beautiful Viennese hotels and buildings, and then there's like cuts to scenes where it's just all rubble and all wrecked and everything. So like post-war Vienna, especially considering it's like all these different occupied zones and like the international zone, is a really cool setting for a movie. And especially for like I don't even know what type of movie to call it, because it's not a detective film, but it's got that kind of vibe to it, you know.
It's got a film noir vibe to it, hasn't it?
Yeah.
And exactly what you're saying, the Vienna is beautiful and yet it's haunting too, because like you said, it's post-war and a lot of these buildings and facades, they're bombed out structures. And to think that they were actually there on location in, you know, maybe post-war, but it's still wartime.
Yeah.
And they made this whole film on location. That's fascinating. It adds a whole other layer to it. It reminds me of Judgment at Nuremberg. Did you ever see that one?
I haven't actually, no.
We watched that in film club, but this was before you joined. Yeah.
Before my time.
Yes. And it was I love that element to it there, and it's very much the same I think this time just in Germany, where you're seeing the streets and it's just rubble everywhere, destroyed mm-hmm. buildings, and it's like, wow, they were actually there. Yeah, very cool. Very, very cool. What did you think? So you said that you really enjoyed the performances. Is that across the board, or did anything stand out to you in particular?
Honestly, no. I think I know that I really liked Joseph Cotten.
Is that the American actor?
Yeah. I really liked him, and I liked the Italian actress's name. She's super famous. Who plays Anna. I thought she was really good as well. And like their performances are, like you say,
Alida Valli. I think that's her.
Like the performances are of the time. I guess that's a way to say it.
Yeah.
But I didn't have an issue with them.
Yeah, me too. I mean, basically, yeah. Across though, I mean, I wasn't really blown away by anybody. I think Joseph Cotten, he's just super cool, isn't he?
Yeah.
How cool is he?
He has this like suave demeanor, a bit Bond-esque maybe.
Honestly, yeah. And his like, just the way he can rock a hat. I really appreciate that because I can't rock a hat at all. I think the shape of my head, there's something up there.
It just doesn't work for some people, Chris. That's okay.
Yeah, it doesn't. So I really admire that it does work for. And the way he can just strike a match and, you know, like light someone's cigarette with his, like, he's so seasoned at it. Whereas if I was to do that in a scene and strike a match, you'd probably see I'm intensely focusing on how close my fingers are to playing, you know? But yeah, no, I like their performances. However, I do think Orson Welles really stood out.
Okay.
Really stood out in a good way.
Yeah, I mean, there's a scene, at the fun fair.
Yes.
On like the
Ferris wheel thing.
Ferris wheel, yeah. That's definitely a standout scene for the movie.
Definitely. Yeah, I agree. I find him so fascinating, Orson Welles. I think he commands the screen when he shows up. His performance in that exact scene that you just mentioned.
Yeah, so unsettling and evil.
Yeah. So good. And it's such a dynamic performance. I feel like all of a sudden the film comes to life. You know, Joseph Cotten's got this very suave, calm, cool, you know, aspect to him. Whereas Orson Welles is electric.
Yeah.
So I appreciated that. And I love how he's barely in the fucking thing. You know, he shows up an hour into the movie.
Yeah, that's a curveball because I wasn't expecting that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. I think that it's fascinating too that, so the movie Touch of Evil, did you watch that in Film Club?
No, I saw Citizen Kane, but not Touch of Evil.
Oh, okay. So Touch of Evil is only 10 years after this movie, maybe 9. Okay. And Orson Welles in that movie looks like he's aged 20 years.
Okay.
He looks awful. And he's lost that spark.
Oh, it's not like artificial like makeup or anything. Like, he actually just looks like shit.
No, I actually... Okay, so now I don't know.
Oh, okay.
But no, I want to say, I think it's actually him. For 1958, I don't think you could fake that to that extent. Mm-hmm. But yeah, he's from what I remember, he seemed like he really lost that spark, and he's in a lot more of the film. Whereas he comes in here, and I'm just like, then I lean forward, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'd love to see more films with him because he's just fascinating.
Yeah, he's definitely a character I'd like. I mean, Orson Welles as a character is someone I wish I knew more about, and it's like his work is something I definitely need to explore a bit more.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. Maybe
especially we'll like he's such an iconic name. Like when you think of this era of film.
Yeah, exactly. So you know, I'm glad, for instance, that we watch Citizen Kane in Film Club because that is obviously something that you need to tick off your film list. I thought he was great. And to what you spoke of earlier, even though this movie didn't really get me, that final chase sequence, masterful.
Not even just that bit, that before when they're planning this meeting at the cafe and you have like the police outside. It looks so good. And it does a good job of building tension, which I admit the film doesn't do a great job at up until then.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Once we got there, then I was like, oh, something's happening now. The movie, it almost feels devoid of action in a sense, like in quotation marks, action. But now it feels like we're starting to enter set pieces, you know, and so that I was grateful for that. And you're right. It's the use of locations, the use of, a shadow and all of this with the black and white photography. Amazing. And then, once we get into that chase, I didn't realize it was going to be so extended, a sequence.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, it goes on.
So good. And he really, Cowell Reed, this director, really does an incredible job of giving you that sense of how trapped Harry Lime feels in those tunnels and these sewers underneath Vienna. Every escape route that he's trying to go to is closed down, and then he has to double back on himself. And there's one moment, and you probably appreciated this as well, when he just comes to a stop. He's in this open sort of, you know, almost like a cavern, and there's all these holes in the wall that lead into all these other sections, and he doesn't know where to go or what to do, and he's just turning around, and he just hears the echoing of shouts and voices of the police coming after him, coming from every single hole, and he's disoriented. And I was like, oh, I mean, chef's kiss, honestly. Yeah,
the film definitely goes from like 0 to 100 in that regard.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. Did you realize that, and I only saw this, I noticed this in the opening credits, one of the assistant directors on the film is Guy Hamilton. Guy Hamilton, who went on to direct a bunch of Bond films, his first film being Goldfinger.
I did not notice that.
Yeah.
That's a cool little bit of trivia there.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. Wow. So he went on to direct Bond films, meaning he also teamed up again with Bernard Lee in this movie, who plays M in all the Bond films that we know, at least so far. We'll watch it again. We're referencing the club a lot, but we're watching all the Bond films. And when I saw him, I was like, oh my God, that's young M. That's so cool. Also, listen to this for a bit of fucking weird trivia. So I'm going down the rabbit hole, right? And I'm like, oh yeah, Bernard Lee. Let me just double check that this is the same actor. He plays M in the Bond films. I come across this movie, which seems like a Bond spoof. How do I not know about this? Because we absolutely would have watched this in our Bond run. Have you heard of it? The movie's called OK Connery. Okay.
Okay.
From 1967. Bernard Lee is in the movie. There's another actor called Adolfo Celli, who was a bad guy in Thunderball. He was a Spectre agent. So there are Bond actors getting together in this spoof. The lead actor, his name in the movie is Neil Connery, played by Neil Connery, Sean Connery's brother.
What?
Yes. And it looks like an Italian director, Alberto Di Martino. What is happening? Even Daniela Bianchi, the woman from the Bond girl from Russia with Love, is in the movie.
I did not know this was a thing.
Exactly. Like, we need to stop everything right now and watch this film. What is this?
Wow. Yeah, I'm very curious.
I've never heard it mentioned. I've never come across it. So thank you, The Third Man, I guess. very, very strange. But now it's really interested me. The actor Trevor Howard, he plays the police officer in this movie. You know,
Calloway.
Is it Calloway his name? Yes.
Yes,
Major Calloway. Really good.
Yeah, he's a pretty big name as well. He did some.
Really? I don't know if I've seen him in anything else.
Yeah, he's Have you seen Brief Encounter, the David Lean film?
I have not.
He's one of the main people in that, and he's in quite a few big films, yeah.
Oh, cool. You know, I couldn't help thinking the whole time I was watching him how much he looks like James Woods, don't you think?
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
He really does. Yeah, he really does. And also, did you realize that this was a TV series as well?
No, I didn't know that either.
Yeah, The Third Man was a TV series that ran from 1959 to 1965. It ran for four seasons.
Okay.
And I don't think it was... I don't know what it was. It says it's a spin-off of this.
Oh, so it wasn't just like a retelling? It was like a follow-up kind of thing?
But even then, it's starring Harry Lime in the lead role. So in this movie, you know, spoiler alert, he maybe doesn't survive the film. So this, or maybe they've left it ambiguous. Maybe is that the whole point of the series? And he just plays...
Maybe he faked his death again.
Oh, that's what it is.
Yeah.
There's the impetus to... You don't see a gunshot on screen, so let's create four seasons of a TV show.
They were playing the long game.
Yeah. Yeah, fascinating. And actually, that's the only other credit that this composer has is for this TV series. So I guess if we watch it, expect more of the same musically. Cool. Well, I guess we can move into our pairings.
Sure. Okay.
This movie. Shall
I go first?
Yeah.
You go for it.
So I, for some reason, I just thought of this movie when watching it, but I've gone with The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo.
I was not expecting that.
Really? Yeah. Okay. I don't know why. I mean, I read the book and then I enjoyed it. And then I never watched the original Swedish film. I watched.
Same. I've only seen that one.
Yeah. From 2011, but
great movie though.
Yeah, I can't even remember what I thought about it, to be honest, but I do remember, I mean, it's Fincher's a master. So it, the similarities for me were kind of, you know, just this missing person sort of investigation taking place on this foreign land, you know, in Girl with the Dragon Tattoo being Sweden. And Fincher just being a master filmmaker, its use of tone and visuals, you know, it just kind of got me thinking along that same route. I don't remember if Daniel Craig is playing Swedish in the film. I think his character is still called Blomqvist.
Okay.
And I think he discards it completely and he's just British. So from what I remember...
That's what I remember as well, yeah.
Yeah. So it felt to me like this isn't a character from their homeland. This is someone coming to another country and getting involved in very much like Joseph Cotton is in this film. So
I
thought that'd make for an interesting pairing.
No, that's a good one. Yeah. I mean, I wasn't expecting that and I wouldn't have, I guess now you justify it, it does make sense, but I wouldn't have put those two together to be honest.
Oh, great.
Yeah. My pairing is with Vertigo, the Hitchcock movie.
Ah.
I don't know if you've seen it.
I have not.
Ah, okay. So I saw it at the BFI last year, or the year before, can't remember.
Oh, on the big screen, nice.
Yeah, and it basically does everything in this film, but just so much better in literally every way. And I enjoyed The Third Man, so this is saying a lot.
Wow.
Especially the music. Vertigo has a beautiful score.
Is it Bernard Herrmann as usual?
I actually think it is. Yeah, it's like just sweeping 60s strings, and it's just so nice.
Lovely.
But yeah, so the plot is not a million miles away. This is about a detective who's like, who follows like his friend's wife, because she's going a bit like crazy, but you know, stuff unfolds and there's always a bit of drama behind everything.
Mm.
I don't want to spoil it because it is a fantastic movie. but they have quite similar vibes, almost this like film noir-esque feeling to it. But I think Vertigo does everything the Third Man tries to do, but better.
Ooh, nice. Yeah. Well, now you're really steering me towards it. Honestly, because, yeah, again, speaking of, I mean, that's, these are great pairings, because we're pairing this film with master filmmakers.
Mm-hmm.
And Hitchcock just is, right? With a capital M.
Yeah.
You know, I could watch a Hitchcock movie and maybe I'm not even digging the movie too much or whatever, but there will always be a moment.
There's always stuff to appreciate.
Yes. Yeah. On a technical level where you just go, oh my God, you have completely, you've done me.
Completely agree. Yeah.
Yeah. I remember when, again, in film club, we watched Marnie. Did you ever see Marnie?
I don't know. I don't think I did, actually.
Yeah, it's Sean Connery, speaking of, and Tippi Hedren. And not a great film. Every now and then you're just like, oh my God, beautiful. Look at that. Look at that shot. Look at that sequence. Incredible.
Yeah.
I think... Actually, sorry, what were you going to say?
No, I was going to say, like, the only black and white Hitchcock film I think I've actually seen was Rebecca.
Oh,
the adaptation of the book. Oh, it's so beautiful. And if you think The Third Man does a good job with black and white photography, like, you have to see Rebecca.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. All right. Again, well, I love doing this. It's just adding to that list. So I'll get to it in like 8 years, because the list is so big.
It's probably in the thousands now, isn't it?
Yeah, no, honestly, it's a joke. Oh, that's great, man. That's a great recommendation. It makes me think as well of Touch of Evil that we discussed earlier. And again, not a great movie, but Orson Welles directed it. And the opening scene is a masterclass in generating tension and suspense. And it feels like he's ripped it straight from the books of Hitchcock. It's so good.
Oh, that's cool.
I recommend you just watch the opening scene alone.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah, definitely check that out.
Excellent. All right. Well, I guess I guess that pretty much wraps it up for us there. Hey, man, I'm really glad you enjoyed the movie and you took much more from it than I did. I'm pleased about that.
Yeah, it's far from perfect. And I definitely think putting it amongst the top British films of all time is a stretch, but there is a lot to appreciate at the same time.
Yeah, for sure. And maybe, yeah, it's that's giving it, don't ever give anything that much weight. You know what I mean?
Yeah, because I went in with very high expectations.
Yeah, me too. Well, that's great, man. Thank you again, Luke.
Cool. No worries.
Good to see you. And I'll see you on the next one. One final note. For the 75th anniversary of The Third Man, in the UK, Studio Canal, under their Vintage Classics label, will be releasing a brand new 4K limited collector's edition Blu-ray packed with tons of special features. And that will be released on November 4th, which should be dropping the week of this release for this episode, which is nice and timely. I want to give, a special thanks to yourself, Luke, and to Phoenix Cinema, as always. Our music is by Stefan Krieger, and our episodes are edited by Noah Anderson. Thank you for sharing, liking, rating, and subscribing this podcast. If you haven't, please do, and then make your way to the Phoenix Cinema to watch a movie. I'll see you there.